Welcome to the Business Spotlight Series. My name is Aaron Wright, and I'm a senior partner here at Action Coach Peachtree. And today we have
Anya Skomarakova. I'm co-founder and COO of Porter Logic.
Very good, Porter Logic. And today we're going to be talking to her about her business journey and challenges, best practices, and kind of share a sneak peek into what it's really like to build and operate a business. So this is your first time to our channel. Please be sure to like and subscribe and to get notifications. We drop new conversations like this in our feed and our corporate Action Coach feed all the time. So just to kind of get started, please give us a brief overview of your background and then tell us a little bit about your business.
Absolutely. So my background's really in software development across a number of different industries, but particularly nowadays in supply chain. So I'm an engineer by training and then went over into software startups, primarily doing product management and working with software development teams to basically take a product, take an idea from ideation through the MVP, through launch, kind of continuing on from there.
Okay, very good. And generally speaking, what does your current ownership structure look like? How are you guys organized?
Yeah, so we're privately owned. So okay. We've got a couple of different owners, and we recently took funding from a venture capital investor as well. So now we're on the venture capital track.
Gotcha. Very cool. So where are you based? Where's home for you?
We are in Atlanta, Atlanta, Georgia. We are, a whole bunch of us are Georgia Tech alums. Atlanta's been home for us for a good while, and we hire and recruit heavily out of there as well.
Very cool. I know when I was in school, Georgia Tech had a great swing dancing program on Friday nights. I don't know if you ever took advantage of that.
I did not know there was swing dancing. I think I was probably in the library at the time.
Okay, you have to make it to Georgia Tech. Congratulations on making it through. So tell us a little bit about you. What is your role in the business? What do you do day in, day out?
Yeah, so I'm officially my title is co-founder and chief operating officer. Unofficially, what that really means is I'm really running everything on the business side. So that's a lot of kind of our go-to-marketing, our business development, business development, marketing, some of the operations, legal, financial sort of aspects. So since we are a growing business, I spend the majority of my time focused on building new client relationships, working with new customers, and basically creating the flywheel to help us grow more and be better.
Very cool. Whatever you're comfortable sharing, give us a sense of scale in terms of the size of your organization, the impact you're having so far.
So we're, as I mentioned, so we're venture capital backed. So we're around the seed stage. We've got about a dozen folks right now, number of customers in a couple different industries. Let me think, what else can I share? We primarily work with manufacturers and value-added distributors who need help with their supply chain, particularly their warehouse management system or kind of some of the procurement order management software and operations there, primarily for food and beverage, any kind of value-added distributors in plastics, building materials, anyone who's doing some sort of semblance of assembly, kitting, or some sort of manufacturing.
Gotcha. Okay. You, as a co-founder, I would imagine you have a number of advisors, and obviously the venture team that you're working with obviously would provide a lot of value there. What are some of the other advisors that you've relied on heavily through the process of getting to where you are, and which have been the most valuable? And so for another entrepreneur, what should they look at? What types of individuals should they seek out for the kind of advice that you've received thus far?
Yeah, so what immediately comes to mind is Georgia in particular has a really great program called ATDC. It's the Advanced technology development center or something like that. But basically what it is, it's a startup incubator and they've got folks in there and it's really low cost to get in, but they've got folks in there going from kind of a, I want to be an entrepreneur, I have an idea, to kind of going through some of the initial programming of what's going to take, to actually having, if you're already launched the company, having a startup mentor advisor and access to connections there and a lot of, a lot of different resources there. So, you know, we've been part of the program for about, I want to say about 3 years now. And so we've got our own, we have our own startup advisor there, who's a, you know, industry kind of industry expert, particularly in our space. We also through that have gotten a lot of access to a number of different investors, kind of both institutional and angels, as well as a number of different mentors that I've met throughout that process. So everyone from, you know, sales kind of SMEs to marketing to product development to general operations. There's a really great network usually around those kinds of those kinds of incubation programs. So I've made a number of good advisors basically coming from there. And then some of my other advisors are really, you know, they're really basically kind of either friends of friends who are in the industry and we got involved in the space, or I'd worked with them previously. And so we've built a relationship like that over time.
Gotcha. So moving on to what you're to kind of more focused on the business itself, what primarily, or who primarily does your business serve? So if someone was in the audience and they were either in a position where they might find your service useful or knew somebody who might, what would your ideal customer or partner look like?
Yeah. So our ideal customer or ideal partner is really someone who is taking components, some sort of components, whether they're, you know, are able to be expired, or whether they're durable or perishable, right? So you're taking those components and you are doing some sort of semblance of assembly or kitting or putting them together, cutting it apart, putting it together, taking it apart, and then you're creating that finished good, and then that's what you are selling to your customer. And so this kind of company, we really work with them, what I'd call mid-market manufacturer. So you're probably at least 30 million in revenue, so you have to have a little bit of scale where spreadsheets are no longer working for you, essentially. And what we really do for them is we help them throughout that entire process. So our software platform has modules around procurement management, so everything from managing your vendors to vendor portal to purchase order management to actually how you're doing that material requirements planning. And then getting into the warehouse space. So how are you receiving? How are you doing put away? How are you doing that work order, that assembly execution? And then how are you pick, packing, shipping what's coming out? And then the other big piece is around inventory control. So you have to know what you have, how much you have, and where you put it. And so having the right system in place for that is something that we help with as well. And then lastly, on the customer side, so being able to take in orders, deciding how you're going to route those orders if you've got multiple warehouses, and then also how does, you know, the Portalogic system talk to your other systems? Like say maybe you have an ERP or you've got a Salesforce or a CRM or some other things that you're using to run your business.
Gotcha. Does your software solution offer troubleshooting on manufacturing throughput and help customers to be able to streamline that process or fix what's broken from the time the material come in to the time it leaves?
Yeah, so we actually do kind of as part of some of our initial conversations, we actually do a warehouse health check, which is basically, you know, give us some of your data and we'll look at it and we'll tell you here's where you're wasting. Here's how long it's taking you to fulfill these orders. Here's maybe some of your troublesome either, you know, types of orders or types of products or certain processes. And so that usually kickstarts the conversation of, where do I need some where do I really need to improve that's really going to drive the needle? Because most of the time what I see is there's no silver bullet to improving your operation to just get like a step level of improvement, especially in a warehouse. It's usually death by a thousand cuts. It's a bunch of little things that once you put them together, they all kind of snowball into a much bigger effect.
Gotcha. So, and I think you kind of probably answered this question already, but when thinking about where your position in the marketplace and your competition, you know, or at least solutions that businesses are currently using where yours might be better, what is it that makes your specific solution unique from what is out there right now?
Yeah. So I kind of joke this, this is kind of my unofficial tagline, but I joke that we fix what the ERP broke. ERPs they're really great systems, but they were built for accountants and they were built for finance. And so there's a very standard set of ways that you should be, if you're running a business, you should have your, you know, accounting set up. And there's only so many ways that you can do that. However, every single operation from the supply chain side is different. And it's very hard to find the right box or kind of find the right mold of, you know, a piece of software to fit your business into that box. And so rather than for us, especially rather than just building another box and trying to find people to fit into, we take the opposite approach, which is the system should fit to your needs and should mold to your operation rather than you having to change to fit what the system needs. And the way that we do that is our system's extremely kind of what I call modular and composable. So very much down to the very, very building blocks of how, you know, different workflows work. It's all configurable and all customizable, which the benefit is it's really being streamlined to how you want that process to work or what things you want those particular users to see and in what order and kind of how that business logic flows through and everything else.
Gotcha. So a business owner or a potential partner doesn't necessarily need the full breadth of your offerings. You can actually customize the solution, it sounds like, to whatever the customer needs.
Yep. And actually, very often, most folks that we work with really start out with a really small kind of a small thing that they're having a problem with. My two most common examples we start out with is around material requirements planning, where yes, they're basically doing it in a spreadsheet, and they've just gone to a scale where that's a problem. And so being able to kind of standardize that and put that into a system and apply their particular logic, because everyone does it a little bit differently. Everyone forecasts a little bit differently. So it's very hard to standardize those things. So being able to launch that or another common example that we start off with is around the assembly execution or the work orders. So how, you know, who's got access to, you know, to the work orders? Are they on a mobile device? How do you pick the next one? How do you tell a person the right steps? And then the other big piece is around the job costing, right? And understanding tracking time against that particular work order. There's different ways that people want to do it that usually current systems don't do that very well.
You're able to integrate even all the way down to like a payroll system even.
Yep. Anything that has an internet connection or has some way to get data in and out of the system, we can integrate to. So the most common ones are obviously, you know, API connections, direct database connections, FTP, but even another one that I see very commonly is just taking up email files and, you know, email attachments and actually using that to load into that data, especially when we're dealing with some, you know, AS/400 systems that are kind of locked away in a haunted closet and everyone's a little bit scared to touch it. It's like, all right, well, we're not gonna touch it. We're just gonna take the data out of it so that you get the right capabilities that you need now. And then you can offload and kind of, you can migrate off of that system on your time, on your pace.
Very cool. Okay, so I kind of have another question. Does your solution necessarily have to be supply chain management, or could it be a customer that is just having problems delivering or with deliverables of their own solution? Does it have to be logistics for your product to work?
So that's the I would. So the short answer to that is no, but that is the kind of customer that we're focusing on, and particularly we are, and just given the kind of given the wide applications of the technology, you really have to focus in order to serve one customer well, because as what you'll find, right, when you kind of if, especially with software, if you're buying a software that's for many types of industries and many types of customers, it doesn't fit any one of them particularly well. And so that customer is having to MacGyver a lot of the solutions because their vendor essentially doesn't quite understand their problem because they have so many different problems that they're trying to juggle at the same time. And so for us, since we have a background in supply chain and particularly warehouse management, that's really where we focused in on now, at least for the next couple of years.
That's extremely encouraging to hear. And I think a really great lesson for any entrepreneur or startup. It's tempting to take a look at your cash flow or take a look at your forecasting and to see other ancillary opportunities that might exist and to go after them. Mm-hmm. Rather than do that, stay very laser focused on who specifically you can serve and serve best, who you can love the best with your limited time and resources. That's a very, very good lesson. Is that, I would imagine that's part of what's making you successful, at least to the point you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a point that we have to go back, you know, every quarter and kind of and reevaluate and kind of tweak and make sure that we're still as close to that target as we need to be. This wasn't my idea. There's a book called Crossing the Chasm by Jeffrey Moore. It's an oldie, but it's a goodie. And he really talks about, you know, for you to succeed in the mainstream market, or he talks about how people adopt technology. And for you to succeed in the mainstream market, what you really need is you need a beachhead. And it's the D-Day analogy of having a very targeted pinpoint, you know, point of attack of saying, hey, we're going to go after this exact kind of customer. And once we capture them, we're going to capture all of their friends. And then we're just slowly expanding out into those adjacent markets. But you really actually have to capture that. You have to capture that beachhead first before you can really be successful in the adjacent markets. Otherwise, what you end up is you end up with onesies, twosies across a number of different customers, a number of different industries, and you don't really have the right formula to scale at that point because you're going to have to be doing things differently for each one of them because their needs are a little bit different. And especially now, because there's such a proliferation of so many different software solutions, your customers are no longer looking for, okay, like what'll get me 80% there? They're looking for what's going to get me 99 or 100% there. And so the rise of vertical software, and they're really looking for, this was built almost practically for me to resolve my exact problem, rather than this was built for the masses and I hope that it fits me or it should fit me well enough.
No, that's awesome. That kind of focus is rare in the business world. And it's encouraging to hear that you guys are laser focused in on that. I'm curious how you've taken that kind of laser focus in on core customers and applied that to your marketing efforts. What strategies do you use? How do you identify those customers that can use 90 or 100% of what it is that you're offering? And how are you approaching them? So how do you find them? And then how do you approach them?
Yeah, so I'll throw out another book recommendation. April Dunford has a really good book on product marketing and positioning, essentially, and that's really what drives our ideal customer profile. The nature of what we sell and just the kind of even frankly the ticket price means that it's not a quick hit. It's more of a strategic initiative for a company to take that on. And so our marketing efforts are primarily around, you know, building brand, building name recognition, and then a lot of kind of outbound prospecting and outbound sales. And the way that we do that is, I go to a good number of kind of industry shows and event shows to go talk to folks and to meet folks that are, you know, presumably if you're taking 3 days out of your week, you have a problem and you're looking for something, or you're looking to educate yourself. So that's usually a good audience. And then we also do a lot of just basically social and web I found LinkedIn to be a really good way to build a brand and start engaging in conversations, and you know, even kind of connect with potential customers and actually get some business out of that. And then the other thing that we do is, you know, I'm using a couple different tools like Apollo, for example, to narrow in on, okay, so this is the type of person, this is the type of title I'm looking for at this kind of company, at this kind of size, and also experimenting with some of the buying intent signals and things like that that are available in the data now.
How are you tracking the leads that you do get? And then how are you following through? Use a CRM? Like how exactly you are doing that process?
Yeah, so we do use a CRM. We use I have HubSpot. I joke that I could not live without a CRM because I don't remember what conversation happened. And then you know, sometimes I'll have, you know, folks I talked to months ago, they'll call me up out of the blue, and I just, you know, I go back quickly to go look at, you know, what we were talking about beforehand. So everything that I have is tracked. So every email, every interaction, everything lives in that CRM. And so that's really useful. And then I have Apollo, which is like my Apollo and LinkedIn, both are connected to HubSpot as well. So that then I don't have to do that much work in terms of, you know, manually adding contacts or uploading them or updating them or any of those pieces.
And I'm curious, just for those of our audience that are either considering or currently working with angels or venture capitalists, mm-hmm. how have they impacted your marketing efforts specifically?
I would say that they're a little bit more, we've more so had, they've more so impacted our marketing efforts from a strategy perspective and from a kind of reconfirming and realigning what that ideal customer is. So I would say that investors, depending on how far away they have been from operating a business, if some of them ever have, they have great ideas, but they don't necessarily know exactly kind of what to do or how to do it. And that's the other thing, as a startup or as a growing company, I've actually been really surprised at how much, you know, kind of free advice and mentorship that you can get. And you can get, you know, you can get a million and one different kind of different pieces of advice. And the problem actually happens is when the rubber meets the road, because you have to execute on the advice or you have to execute on the strategy, and no one else but you can help on execution, essentially. So for us, our investors have been really good in terms of opening some doors that would have been more difficult to open without them. And then giving us a little bit of that kind of a public vote of confidence that, hey, you know, they vetted us, they believe in what we're doing, right? We're in this for the long run.
Trading on their relational capital, absolutely. Those kinds of deposits are every bit as important as financial investments. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%. Your investor it's practically like a marriage, and without one that you cannot get divorced out of it easily. So it's 100%. It's not just the money. It has to be the right partner, and they have to be on the same kind of trajectory that you are. They have to understand the kinds of industry you're in, the kind of business that you're in, because if they have the wrong expectations, or they just don't understand your business, you're constantly going to be basically, you know, having to explain why this is not working or why that is not working.
Gotcha. All right. And as we're kind of coming to an end of our time here, I'm wondering if you could tell us a story. So owning a business, running a business, you fight a lot of battles every day. Some are bigger than others. Some are more rewarding than others. But you know, speaking from a storytelling perspective, what is the biggest dragon you have slain thus far, and what was the reward that you received after conquering that challenge?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think for us, it was really getting our first customer. And you know, I think, and they always say like the first one's the hardest, and they say the first 10 are the hardest, and they say the first 100 are the hardest. So I don't know when it gets easier, to be honest.
Okay. Probably never. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, 100%, especially when you're building, you know, when you're building a mission critical system, mm-hmm. You know, especially nowadays, buyers are it's not about fear of missing out. It's about fear of messing up. And mm-hmm. like the old adage goes, you know, no one ever got fired for buying IBM. We've got some, you know, similar names that are like that now. And so for us, kind of getting our first customer was a lot of knocking on doors, a lot of having different conversations. But really, it was a pretty lengthy sales process, because it was, you know, there's one person who initially saw it. He had a vision, you know, wanted to. Believed in it, but there was also, you know, there's a number of different detractors at the company as well, where, you know, they weren't entirely sure whether or not, you know, we'd be able to execute, or whether this was going to be good for the company, or whether, you know, they should go with something that was a lot more established, basically. Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of, you know, it was a big battle of building the trust and multi-threading, kind of not with just, you know, one team, but it was the operations team, the engineering team, was a number of different folks, and then, you know, getting to the finish line, getting all of those things signed and dotted, and then after that, actually, you know, delivering on everything that we said we were going to deliver.
No, that's a very familiar story, but it's always exciting though, you know, mm-hmm. because you've set off on a journey. It's a journey of exploration. It's an adventure. The forest is very dark sometimes, and you have to navigate your way through the trees. And sometimes you feel like you're lost and you don't know where you're going. But the reward is there at the end. You just got to push through.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if you're starting a company, your mom and your friends will always be supportive, and they'll tell you how great it is. And even your business contacts are going to tell you how great it is. But until you get someone to actually pay for it, and it's just words, basically. And that's really the true that's really the true marker of, you know, what is working, what isn't working, right? Is because no one parts, especially in this economy, whether you're B2B or B2C, no one is parting with coin willingly, essentially, or no one's just kind of, you know, has oodles of change to spend on, you know, on a kind of a half-baked idea, right? They're all looking for some kind of value or ROI or some way to get an edge. And so if you're getting paying customers, like, you are demonstrating that value to them. And that's really the big hallmark of how well you're doing.
Very cool. All right. Well, I feel like I could talk to you all day. I really appreciate your time and the effort that you've put into your business. I mean, it's very, very clear that you're passionate about it, and it's pretty exciting what you're doing and the product that you're offering to your customers. Here for our viewers, kind of tell us a little bit about how they can find you, how they can learn more about you, anything you'd like to offer.
Yeah, so I pretty easy to find, Anya Skomarakova. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so think we can link over to a profile there. Also, porterlogic.com, logic.com is our website, so you can feel free to get in touch from there. And then my email is Anya, A-N-Y-A, at porterlogic.com as well, so.
Very good. Awesome. Well, and I work for Action Coach. We are a 30-year-old business coaching company, helping businesses of all sizes to become more streamlined with what they're doing, from employee relations to sales, marketing, process improvements, policies and procedures, anything along those lines. So kind of a one-stop shop for business coaching. So that's who we are and what we do. We're founded by Bradley Sugars, and you can find us on actioncoach.com. So there'll be more information linked below in the description to this video, and we very much appreciate you taking the time today to enjoy our interview today with Anya, and look forward to seeing you in the next Business Spotlight interview. Thank you very much, and have a good day.